MX Network production.
EVS Sports brings you a cheeky Brit and an American YouTube racing sensation weekly on the LVK More Than Moto podcast. Here's your hosts, Lewis Phillips and Kellen Brower.
Welcome everybody back to the EVS Sports LVK More Than Moto podcast, episode number 12. I'm Kellen Brower from MotoOnline.com, Lewis Phillips from Vital MX. Back at it again, but this time remote, Lewis. I've been feeling a little bit under the weather this week, so in order to make sure that I don't pass on whatever I have to you, we're doing this remote, and so that's the story this week.
Yes, normally I maybe would reply to that with a friendly remark, a bit of fun between friends, something of the sort, you know, lighthearted, just fun with friends. Unfortunately, that is no more.
Oh, I apologize.
We are now strictly business. We are strictly colleagues. We are strictly facts. So I am disappointed to hear that you are not at maximum health, and I hope that you regenerate maximum health at the earliest convenience for you and all around you.
Lewis, I feel as though you may have misinterpreted some people in the comments. No?
The world is fucked. And I'm allowed to say that because I'm now factual, and that is factual.
Okay, yeah,
that can be our little title. The world is fucked. You can't have fun. You can't make little friendly remarks like, I can't be nice to you anymore, Kellen. I've just got to be straight down the line to the point. So I can't. Don't expect sympathy out of me. Don't expect nice comments. Don't expect fun. I can't do that. I'm sorry. The people have spoken.
I will get out in front of this, though, and say that you and I do get on well, and we're fine.
We don't, Kellen.
Yes, Lewis, it's fine. It's okay. Everything's going to be okay. All right.
The people have spoken. We hate each other. I think it's more specifically, I hate you. The theme.
No. The reality is, I actually hate you, so...
Well, no, because you are the victim, according to the world. yeah. I'm pretty sure that some people are trying to get in contact with abuse hotlines on your behalf.
Fantastic. We're just spitting nonsense at this point. So, St. Louis over the weekend, we were both there. We're going to hit on a few of those topics from the weekend to begin with. But are you happy with St. Louis? Like, was it a good enough round that you left there feeling like, yeah, all right?
Well, are we talking about the racing, or are we talking about like our experience as press?
In general, combine the whole thing.
Okay. The racing was okay, I guess. I don't know. The last two Triple Crowns haven't hit like Triple Crowns. And I don't know why. Because Anaheim 2 was maybe the best night of racing in the history of the sport. It was okay. But it wasn't like Triple Crown mayhem. I was welcomed to St. Louis by my Uber driver, who told me that it was the murder capital of America, so that was nice. I was sure to leave that in my TripAdvisor review of the city. I wasn't murdered. Close. If looks could kill Helen, maybe the story would be different. But no, I'm here. So, you know, if you would make it out of the murder capital of the United States, you've got to be pleased somewhat.
No, I think you should as well. I think you're right, though. Like, I don't know why the Triple Crowns haven't really hit the last few ones. Like, obviously, there was sweeps this weekend. There was a sweep the weekend or the two weekends before in Indy. So I don't know what it is. Is it as simple as just early in the season, there's more chaos, and the later we go, the less?
Maybe, but yeah, because I guess actually, if you think back to years past, the last Triple Crown is never as exciting, is it?
Yeah,
I wouldn't be opposed to all of the Triple Crowns being in the first half, just to really get us off and running with some excitement.
I have a wild take for that, which is I think Anaheim 1 should be a Triple Crown.
I could get on board with that, but no one will ever get on board with that.
No, I know, but Anaheim 1, it's like the Daytona 500 of Supercross, and so if you made it a Triple Crown, like if it was like Monster Cup and it was like, hey, if you win A1, you get 500 grand or something like that because it's winning the biggest race of the year, and then you have all the hype built around it. I think it'd be a lot of fun. personally.
It would, but you will never get that, Kellen. But that was a great idea. I want to compliment you on bringing a great idea to the table, and that was great. So well done you.
Okay. Let's get into our topics here in just a sec. Before we do that, a big shout out to EVS Sports. Experience the pinnacle of knee protection and injury prevention with the EVS Web Eclipse Knee Brace. For over 39 years, EVS has relentlessly honed their engineering expertise, consistently delivering award-winning knee braces. This legacy of excellence is embedded in every facet of the new Web Eclipse, which represents the culmination of their tireless dedication to innovation and rider safety. Use code LVK30 to save 30% off today. We also want to give a shout out to Nomura for presenting this show, the leading provider of engine components for motocross, ATV, UTV, and personal watercraft for over 2 decades. Nomura has been the preferred choice for premium and dependable engine components for more than 20 years. Whether you're restoring your vintage bike, rebuilding your four-wheeler, or upgrading your new 450 race motor, Nomura has you covered. Our extensive line of cast and forged pistons, connecting rods, gasket kits, engine valves, and soon cylinder kits that enhance your engine's performance. Keep an eye out for our new and innovative products in 2024 and beyond. Stay up to date by following us on Instagram at Nomura_technologies. Racetech, also a presenter of this show, though, of our Racetech fan topic in the middle of this one. And Racetech Gold Valves provide a plush feel with drastically improved bottoming resistance and increased traction. All Racetech products are 100% guaranteed and made in the USA. So fun little fan topic that we're going to get into here halfway through the show this week. But let's jump into our first topic of the day, Lewis. Over the weekend, Eli Tomac sweeps the Triple Crown. He hadn't even won. He won one of the Triple Crown races at Anaheim, too. But other than that, it had been a little bit of a tough road to see him try to actually win a race. And then he sweeps. It was a technical sweep because Jet Lawrence won the second race but jumped on a red cross flag. So wasn't a clean, clean sweep necessarily. But yeah, Tomac back in the winner's circle. And we had debated him on the show before going into St. Louis because he had, what, 7-6-6 before St. Louis and then wins. Mm-hmm. And so now he has 100 career Supercross podiums. He has 52 career Supercross wins. And old Eli Tomac appears to be back in some shape or form. And he was happy after the race as well, when he has definitely not been happy of late, I feel like. So
not so happy before the race.
Yeah, definitely happy before the race. Does this mean that Eli Tomac stays around? Like, are we going to see Eli Tomac go beyond the next 5 rounds of Supercross and more?
It does seem to be trending that direction, doesn't it? Even though it is weird that last year we had the announcement about outdoors at the end of Feb, and we're now at the beginning of April, and we have Zilch. So that's weird that it's quiet, but it does seem as though, I do believe, if I was a betting man, I would bet on 2025 Supercross. Put it this way. I would bet on 2025 Supercross more than I would all of outdoors this year.
Yeah. Well, he did say on the Pulp MX show on Monday that he's looking at doing a few outdoors. He wouldn't commit to anything. Steve kind of just like said, hey, it sounds like this is happening. And Eli was kind of like, yeah, we'll see. Which tends to mean with those guys when they're on the fence, the fact that they're even, we'll see, is a yes, at least in my opinion. Like, the one that blew me out of the water of late was when Ryan Dungey said, I might be coming back for Supercross, and then suddenly that was just completely gone, because I thought that that was his way of saying it's happening.
Yeah.
Do you think that we will see him in a couple outdoors then, based on that response?
I don't know why St. Louis would have pushed him away from outdoors. It should have pushed him towards it. So yeah, I would believe so, unless there is some sort of concern that the aftermath of the Achilles will be more of a hindrance outdoors, or maybe he needs to rest because of the strain put on the Achilles thus far. And so it's like, I need a summer, mm-hmm. or at least an abbreviated schedule just to like rest the body. I put it this way. I do not believe that in Salt Lake City, we will be waving goodbye to our friend Eli.
Yeah, I would agree. I know that we debated whether or not he will do SMX this year, which I think would be arguably the end goal to why he would do a few outdoors to a degree, is to stay up in the points and not fall off. But I mean, last year, granted, he was almost Supercross champion, but he made it straight in. He didn't have to race any outdoors to qualify for SMX. Do you foresee that if he doesn't do outdoors, he will still do SMXs here?
Yeah, I do not see why you would not do SMX if you were Tomac. He is automatically seeded now, so there's that. The money is good. I mean, I guess he doesn't need money. Not that I know his bank accounts. We're not that close. Trust me. Yeah, I would be shocked if whatever his future plans are, if they don't include SMX. Because also, if he's doing 2025 Supercross, I feel like SMX is key for that. Because it's like, well, essentially, if he's not going to do SMX, he's basically going to repeat what he did this year or this offseason just gone by. So I would imagine above the money, above all of that, the race pace and rust shedding that comes with SMX would prove to be advantageous heading into 2025. And I do believe that he would be aware of that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that like to bridge the gap for potentially making a swan song run at a Supercross title in 2025, he definitely cannot just stop cold turkey in May and expect to get back on form in January 2025.
I say this that I would bet on him in 2025, but I stand by what I said last week. Like, most people would have bet money on him retiring in 2021. So whatever way it goes, it's quite shocking that we could still have Eli in 2025. Like, 2021, 2025, long, far apart. So for us to essentially keep hitting red on the roulette table year after year after year is really something.
Yeah. Well, to go back to last week's topic, again, I feel like that recurrence of, I might retire, I might not, happens with a lot of guys. So I don't know that, for me, it's like shocking if he comes back in 2025 at this point. Like, it's kind of like, oh, saw that with every one of these other guys over the years.
No, but I can't even recall a rider who played that game for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I can.
Who?
Chad Reed.
That's different.
I mean, but it's the truth. Chad Reed, it was like rolled off the track in like 2012, 13, whatever it was on his Honda. And we're like, okay, see you later. That was a great career. And then he raced to 2020. So,
yeah, but that wasn't so much. I feel like that wasn't so much him putting it out there, was it? It was more like us filling in the cracks and going, oh, we believe he's going to retire. Whereas this is actually like every year it's like, what are you doing? And Eli's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me with Chad, I felt like it was when he decided to come back on a Cowie with 2-2, that switchover was like, whoa, fracturing the Honda relationship, that must mean the end of his career. And then he comes back and wins with Cowie. And then 2-2 ends, oh, that must be the end of his career. Wait a minute. No, he's coming back with Factory Honda and JGR, and like it just was like always a mixed bag. So
yeah, but again, you are pointing to external factors. With Tomac, there are no external factors. There's no like Tomac's just lost his ride. There was Tomac tore his Achilles, but there is no like, well, he's fractured this relationship. Well, he's just done that. What, like, you know, it's
yeah, but this one, all, I feel like right now there is an external factor, which is Star is doing what they can to appease the legend of the sport and like keep him around a little bit as long as they possibly can. But in the same way we talked about the switchover with all these guys in his generation eventually leaving, and at what point is the crossover for Gas and Cowie and everyone to be like, we got to look for the future. I think Star also is kind of like, we don't want to let maybe Justin Cooper walk if he could be the second guy to Cooper Webb. But can we keep paying three bikes on the track? You know what I mean? Like, that's also an external factor.
Yeah, but they are never saying no to Tomac.
No, I don't think so either.
Ever,
but I think
ever,
that,
ever.
I think that is a little bit of a push with it to a degree. Now, one thing I did want to bring up with this before we run out of time is I heard chatter in the pits was silly season began earlier than usual this year because of the Prado thing. Like, normally we would expect deals to be starting to be signed about now. Maybe Daytona would be like the earliest, but Prado's deal was signed before that, which means that everyone is now like in full sprint to figure stuff out. Do you think there is dominoes still waiting to fall for whether or not Tomac continues racing?
No, because I believe it's all Tomac. It's all his decision. I do not believe there are other dominoes, but I will say this. I'm not as certain that the Prado to Kawasaki deal is signed.
Interesting. Okay.
I've pushed back against the claims that it's not done, but the claims keep on coming. Like, I'm not saying he won't be on Kawasaki. I'm just saying I don't know if it's as done as we all think.
Okay. I mean, a couple people I've talked to about it, it sounds like that was the domino that began silly season already. So,
yeah, it's very confusing.
It is confusing for sure.
A lot of confusing occurrences in the sport, you know? That's kind of how the sport works.
Again, so we talked about this last week, but just to wrap it up, we think Tomac's back in 2025?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'll say the same. And I also think he'll probably race more outdoors than we think would be my guess.
I don't really know about outdoors.
Yeah. Well, just a guess. We'll see. Let's move on to our second topic of the day. Get off of the Eli train for a minute here and just talk about the rest of the field, really, and what we have seen from this 450 class, or you could talk about the 250 class as well, but what we've seen from this field of riders through 12 rounds so far, because we're now at the point where the cream is rising to the top a little bit of this class, and we see pretty consistent guys in the top five to a degree. But is there a person, Lewis, that for you, you're looking at every single week as... that guy's underrated. Like, we're not giving him enough credit, or he's just non-existent at this point by people's standards.
Well, let's start this by saying Justin Cooper is off the table. Because okay. We are both agreed we would both immediately say Justin Cooper, yes?
Yeah, I would think so. Okay.
So he's off the table, because otherwise that's boring. So, now that I've said that, I've realized I do need another rider. Which... I could go out of left field here. I'm not sure that I'm very passionate about this one. Just posing it to the board. Shane McElrath?
It's a good one, honestly.
Like, I feel like a lot of people have just written him off as he's now a fringe top 15 guy for the rest of his career. Like, not really going to progress higher than where he is at Suzuki. As far as like teams in the paddock, like I feel like he has been written off, kind of, maybe not fully, but on the way. And he has been solid, top 10 at the weekend. He's run up front a few times recently. Okay, not done a great job of staying there. But what really spurs this idea on in my mind is we all forget that he battled Chase Sexton for a 250 title. So like there is... it's in there somewhere, and maybe people are just disregarding that. I don't know.
No, I think that's a really good one. That would be one that I would point to as well as certainly not being talked about because, like, honestly, like I know that we go to the races, Lewis, so we don't always get a chance to like really deep dive in the TV show. But have we seen Shane McElrath like really on TV once this year? Like, has there been like Shane McElrath TV time? He's kind of in that like Savachi zone from yesteryear of. He just never gets on TV because he gets fifth or sixth in the heat race and then 10th to 13th in the main event, which is just no man's land for TV time. You either get on TV because you're in the LCQ and having those crazy battles or in the final transfer spots in the heat race, or you're up front in the main events.
Yeah, but like you just kind of alluded to, it's not just McElrath. You can say that about 12 riders in the 450 class.
But so unlike McElrath, I feel like with Jay Coop or Hunter Lawrence, who would maybe be my pick for underrated, these guys at least get starts occasionally, so they're there. Like Shane has had maybe two good starts this year. Like he started fourth or something in San Francisco, and then I think this weekend didn't he have a pretty good one as well, one of the races too. So it's not like he's starting at the sharp end enough that you're like, oh, Shane McElrath. He hasn't led a heat, I don't think, either. So things like that.
Yeah, maybe more could be done to push the narrative of like McElrath trying to realize the potential that he showed in 250s on a 450.
Yeah.
I actually asked him on press day a couple of weeks ago. So allow me to share another risque press day question to you now. I said to McElrath, honestly, looking back, because he was talking about five different teams last year, struggling to find his feet. I said, looking back, was going to star for your final year of 250s and breaking the Austria relationship that was quite long-standing, did that fuck the rest of your career? And he was quite really good talk about it.
Yeah.
That is a question that you refuse to answer. Just putting that out there. That is a question that you refuse to answer. Compare that question to, do you feel like starts in general are related to confidence and momentum?
Would you like me to go get a shovel? Like, I don't know how much you want to dig here.
But that was fine. I'm talking about McElrath.
I know. No, I mean,
I'm not talking about anyone else.
But Shane's always really good about that. Like, Shane will give you deep dives about a lot of stuff in his career and things that he likes or doesn't like about the bike. Like, even if you ask him straight up, like, so far things are going the way you want on Suzuki, he'll give you a good answer. We're deep in this topic already. I haven't even given mine. And it depends on which way you want me to approach this, Lewis, because one answer I would like to give is Hunter Lawrence, which sounds stupid because he just got a podium. So is he really underrated? But until he literally fractured his scapula at Daytona, he was working his way towards this position, came back, still raced with a fractured scapula, and now just got on the podium, led some laps over the weekend. Like, all the hype has gone to his brother because of obvious reasons. But I feel like Hunter's been, can we say, the best rookie that's not Jet Lawrence?
That's another debate topic. We could go down a rabbit hole, so I will ignore that, and I will go back to the original Hunter point. I agree, and I was going to pick him, but ultimately two reasons I didn't were, one, he seems to be set at Honda HRC for a long time.
Okay.
So how underrated are you really when you've got that ride long time?
Yeah.
And also, can you really say that he is more underrated than Justin Cooper? No. So then I moved further down the list.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought we all just agreed that Justin Cooper is by far the most underrated. Nobody's talking about him.
Still. No, but I'm using him. I was kind of using him as like a reference, though.
Yeah.
Like I was trying to go below Justin Cooper. If he's sea level, I was trying to go below sea level.
Yeah. Well, then
ground myself after the events of recent weeks.
The other way I would go with this, and I know that you would love this pick, is Malcolm Stewart. Because while he hasn't had the same level of mixing it up or like mookie speed that we've necessarily seen in the past, he has been slowly making progress all year long. And now he just finished seventh over the weekend. He is kind of that next guy. Like, we see the top 7-8 guys. Jay Coop is sometimes in there. Hunter happened to be in there this weekend. You got Eli and Jason and Ken and Chase and Cooper and Jet. And then the next group always seems to feature Malcolm, but he's never even on anyone's radar. And I feel like he's slowly getting better every single week.
Okay. Answer this question. Hunter, Cooper, Malcolm. I realize I just used two first names and one last name, but there we go. Hunter, Malcolm, Cooper. List those in order of best rider to worst rider in 2024.
Best rider to worst?
Yes. In 2024 exclusively.
Yeah, I would probably say Hunter, Jay Coop, Malcolm.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
So that I've just blown your argument out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I was trying to say, like, nobody has talked about Malcolm Stewart of late again.
Yeah, we're kind of unearthing a problem where no one really talks about anyone who isn't one of the top seven riders.
A little bit. Bring back semis. We need guys to win those semi races again, so we have reason to talk about them. But yeah,
I actually have a theory. We'll save this topic. I had a theory. I've had this dating back to my MXGP days. I'm now rolling it over to here. If we had F1 style points, where say the top 12 in a main event got points only, it would give us more of a reason to cheer and talk about the second half of the field, because Benny Bloss, for example, he's been hovering 12, 13, 14 the last couple of weeks. So like, he was 12th, he was 14th. We're kind of indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
If the cutoff for points was 12th, Benny Bloss would be a much bigger story when, he got the point. He got his first point of the season. Oh, he's just done it again. It would be much more of a story and a reason to grip fans than just, he did one position better than last week.
Yeah.
Now, this is a whole topic, which I guess we save for the future. So I don't know if you want to even reply, but yeah.
We will talk about that at some point. The only thing I will rebuttal with, and why I don't think it would ever work, is you'd have too many what I'd call starting parks, in that there would be the Cades, Mitchell Harrison type of rider that in their own mind could finish 12th. They really could, but they might also be like, would I rather save my bike and body and get my purse for starting this race, doing three laps and pulling off the track and getting no points because I wasn't going
to
get points?
Well, no, you can still have the purse relevant to each position.
I get that, but how much bigger is the purse from 20, you know, first place to 13th?
Well, do you really believe that Mitchell Harrison is counting points and going, oh, I need this for 1 point to help me move from 24th to 23rd in the championship?
I do, because I think all those guys are like, I need to be in SMX for money.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't work with SMX, would it?
No. So, but
unless you had championship points and SMX points as separate entities.
That would be very confusing. I think people would be well annoyed about that.
People are annoyed about everything, Kellen. The world's fucked.
Okay, let's move on from that, because we'll get back around to that topic. I think we'll probably talk about it next week or something like that. And get into our Race Tech fan topic. And we put this as kind of non-moto. It really is moto, but it's a more overarching theme to what we can do to make these athletes, I think, a little bit more recognizable faces across the landscape of sports. And it comes from at AidenIrvin1 on Twitter. And this is an old topic, so we pulled out from the annals of our tweets over the years, or over the year so far, I should say. And Aiden says, should Supercross have a rule that riders are only allowed to put helmets on some period of time before the race starts? 60-second card for helmets, 30-second card like normal after. I think it could potentially make the riders more recognizable to less diehard fans. And yes, to a degree, like he says, his point is, these guys all roll up to the gate, and before they're even in the stadium, they usually have a helmet on. Some guys don't, but a lot do. And then they'll just get on their bike and put their goggles on. You never see their face. You just see them on their bike racing until they pull off the track. And some guys, you don't even see on the podium because they don't finish on the podium, so you don't ever see their face. So could this help if we had a rule of like, hey, no helmets, we need to see faces?
I'm honestly not certain that we didn't already do this topic, but anyway...
We didn't.
You sure?
Yeah.
I feel like I've discussed this with you. Maybe we just had a friendly chat off air.
Maybe.
Friendly chat where I try to stab you with a knife. What I do believe could be useful, and I don't know how it would work, is if we could make the tunnel or staging more presentable, which most often it isn't because it's in the bowels of a stadium and not meant to be seen, really. If we could interview riders in staging, but that wouldn't work because the 250 main event and the 450 main event are so close together, there isn't that dead air time. But you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Almost like when they interview F1 drivers walking to the grid. That's kind of what I have in my head. Like, you have Eli walking to staging and, like, you walking along with him and talking to him. That would be cool, I think. And then at that point, they obviously wouldn't have helmets on. So that's where my mind immediately went to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can see from the TV broadcast this year, and people are throwing stuff at the TV when it happens. They'll do a, hey, we're in the pits as Jet Lawrence gets on his Honda to go down on staging for the main event as the 250 race is on the track, and people are livid at that. So here's a fix, in my opinion, that you could do for that. You know how an MXGP... Lisa Leyland, it's still Lisa Leyland, isn't it?
Yep.
She will do interviews with two riders, a team manager and a rider, whatever, on the gate before the moto. And Paul Malin will throw it down to her as if it's live. It's not live. These guys are already on their parade lap or something along those lines. And it's just, here's Lisa Leyland's recorded interview from 5 minutes before that. Why don't we do that? Why don't we have JT and Will in the bowels of the stadium or whatever, grabbing those guys while they're just standing there waiting and doing a 1 minute interview, and it's pre-recorded, but as they were going to the gate for the 450 main event, you just spin it back real quick to that interview about what Jet thinks about a bike setup change before the main event, or what Eli thinks about how his gate selection has worked so far tonight, and is he going to go back to that one? Things like that. You get the face in front of people, so it's not just looking at them putting their goggles on for the 98th time. Couldn't that work?
Yes. I feel like it would be harder, like you say, whereas MXGP, you do feel as though it's live. Even though I know it's not live, it still feels live when you look at it, even though it's so obviously not because of the cuts. I feel like it would be very obvious for Visa pre-recorded for Supercross. Yeah. I just want the candidness of, like, Tomac walking towards JT and JT, like, literally just walking up to him and being like, so, that sort of candidness. I don't know how many riders would be thrilled at that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, it's a culture thing for this sport, isn't it? Like, there would be, if you make any sort of change like this or to anything really, there's an adjustment period where, like, the riders are so set in a routine that it's like almost getting them out of old habits. Similar to press day. Press day routine is ride up, go and look at the go and look at the track and try to avoid as many interviews as possible. Yeah. So even if you try and alter the format of that or tell them you're not allowed to look at the track, it would be such a hard, like, it's almost like so set in your ways, it would be such a hard thing to comprehend. So I believe that's a pitfall to the issue. But even to the question, if there's a limit on when you can put your helmet on, it still won't really work because the 250 main event and the 450 main event are so close together, there isn't the time to make use of that. So that's the biggest issue.
Yeah.
Because am I wrong that we basically do checkered flag, 250 interviews, main event start?
Yeah, I mean, they will do... like pre-race report, keys to the race, whatever, they'll throw it down to Will to do a track report or something along those lines. So there is a little bit of time.
But we're talking 2 minutes before the gate drops, yeah, and I do not believe you should be interviewing riders then.
Right, and those guys are on a parade lap. They come in from the parade lap. At most, there's a few minutes from there. So, again, they won't take their helmet off. They'll change goggles maybe. Sometimes they'll have a tire change or something like that, but not much. Did you notice early in the year, and I haven't noticed it of late, but maybe I'm just not paying well enough attention, TV, they did, so in the NFL, when they do, like, here's the starting 11 players for the NFL, you know, Green Bay Packers this week, and they will have, okay, they'll have the players have a little spot on screen where it'll be like, you know, hey, I'm the quarterback, I went to this college, or something
yes,
like
yes,
that.
Yes, 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 yeah. yes.
And yep. So at the beginning of the year, it would be like, Levi Kitchen, Washougal, Washington, number 47, or something like that. And it would just be like his face on the screen for a second. So they were trying...
actually them doing the interview, wasn't it? It was actually them talking. Like, it wasn't a photo, it was a video.
Yeah, it was a video. But that's the point, is that that was TV, again, trying to do exactly what Aiden Irvin here is talking about. Face. Getting their face in front of people and putting three or four riders on the screen with just that quick little snippet of, like, hey, I'm Garrett Marchbanks, Club MX Yamaha, or something like that. And then you're there, like, oh, that's what his face is like.
I can't remember which rider it was. I want to say Mumford or Voland. There's one of those riders where it isn't cut at the right time, and there's a little awkward bit of dead air.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that too. But that's TV's trying to do stuff like that, because even the NFL, which is, you know, they're almost always in their helmets. They can't be on the field without a helmet on. And we do see them on the sidelines at times, but it's normally the superstars of the sport, which is the same way that we have here. The only faces that are super recognizable are the ones that are consistently on the podium, or they'll have pre-race footage of them before they put their helmets on or whatever. Like, it's not like we suddenly just go to Shane McElrath, as you would put it, just hanging out. Like, it's always Jet Lawrence or Eli or Chase or something like that.
But again, this is a common theme of the podcast. We all need to do better, from the fans to the media to the teams. We all need to do better at caring about these riders who are outside of the top six, like, and shining a spotlight and sharing the stories and all of that. We need to do better. Like, and again, it goes back to what I said about, like, being stuck in your ways and it's hard to, like, readjust and re-educate, but fuck me, we need to do better at that.
It's true. But I mean, you and I, we both see the website numbers, right?
Well, yeah, that's the issue. Yeah. Like, but that's what I mean. That's
you
why
interview
I
Benny
included...
Bloss. Interview Benny Bloss, and then you interview Eli Tomac. The numbers are staggeringly different.
But that's why I even included the fans in that, because even like the fans, for some reason, need to care more as well. But also, that's on us, because if you post a Benny Bloss interview with no interesting narrative, okay, it won't get clicks. So it's up to us to find a way to make Benny Bloss unmissable, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I like make it a compelling story.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's on all of us for sure. But like I said, I want to give credit to TV crew because a lot of people like to crap on them for stuff. I really do think they have tried this year to get faces in front of people more with photos or that video thing. And TV over the years has always done the, like, we're going to commercial break and it'll just be like you said, Carson Mumford. Hey, I'm Carson Mumford and you're watching Supercross on Peacock or whatever. Like, they'll always do those, you know, little video shoot type of things. So they're trying, in my opinion, hard to get those faces in front of people.
Agreed.
So I think that's a step they're trying to take. I think that Aiden's right. Like, we do need to have it so that to some degree, these guys aren't wearing their helmets at all times and shying away from stuff because, like, even press day interviews, guys keep their helmets on sometimes too.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Yeah.
But that's also because they really don't want, I believe that if a rider has a helmet on, they do not want to do an interview and they are trying to send a message.
No, I've talked to some riders before and they're like, I forgot my hat, but I know I need to have my signage.
Okay, well, that's even worse.
I know, but that's where we're at. Okay, so that was our Race Tech fan topic here. Shout out again to Race Tech. For 40 years, Race Tech has been supplying the motorcycle industry with high quality suspension components made right here in the USA. For modern to vintage, Race Tech is your go-to source for suspension performance. Halfway through the show, shout out to EVS Sports. Experience the pinnacle of knee protection and injury prevention with the EVS Web Eclipse knee brace. For over 39 years, EVS has relentlessly honed their engineering expertise, consistently delivering award-winning knee braces. This legacy of excellence is embedded in every facet of the new Web Eclipse, which represents the culmination of their tireless dedication to innovation and rider safety. Use code LVK30 to save 30% off today. All right, second half of the show, Lewis. Let's jump into the Red Cross flag situation over the weekend in St. Louis. Five riders penalized. Jason Anderson gets penalized twice for jumping on the Red Cross flag twice. It was out on the white flag after Jet Lawrence and Eli Tomac had gone by. Then the Red Cross flag comes out, and then it stayed out from then until the end of the race. So five guys did it, which means that 17, 16 guys didn't do it because Vince was the guy down. And I feel like this week the debate has surrounded, is there a problem to a degree? Because a lot of guys saw it, five guys didn't. But those five guys were also at the front of the field in heavier battles.
Well, that's because they were too busy making burgers.
Okay. But... we have the reignited conversation of, is there something that could be done different? Is there something that could be done better? The Red Cross flag was displayed by the AMA official as a stagnant flag, which riders requested because when it was being waved, some people thought that's a white flag. So now it's a stagnant flag so they can see the actual Red Cross. So that was a change that riders asked for, and then there's still a bunch of people who hadn't seen it. So what do we do from here, Lewis? Could we do LED lights on the bars, LED lights on the finish structure, in-helmet communication? Where do we go?
My only thought on this is how hazardous would it have been to have the Red Cross flag on the other side to the checkered flag? Obviously, then you are in the racing line. You are narrowing down the track somewhat. But counter to that, you're in the racing line. Well, they shouldn't be jumping anyway. So it's fine. How hazardous and ridiculous is that? Because I feel like that you're more in the rider's line of sight. You're away from the checkered flag to avoid confusion. You're not on the side that the flag normally is, which means that you would be drawn like, ah, what's that?
Yeah.
But how would that be considered dangerous? I don't know.
Let me ask you, are you saying this as, there should have been a flagger there on that side of the track the entire night, or wanted the finish flagger to walk over there?
I'm saying because the finish flagger wasn't doing the Red Cross as well.
Yes, he was.
Two guys.
No.
Really?
Yep. Same guy. He had left hand with the flag.
Give that guy a raise.
Right hand with the checkered and white flag.
Well, give that guy a raise. That's some effort. Well done to him. Jesus. Like, let's get him on as a guest.
Okay.
Okay, then in that case, hand the Red Cross flag to someone else and send them to the other side of a jump.
Well, I don't know for a fact, but I'm almost positive they avoid sending someone across the track at all costs. The only time they'll do it is like a medical situation or a tough block in the track and a dig dug will go out there. I can't remember a time that an AMA official with a flag went across the track, maybe onto the track to block people from going on a certain spot. If they have the Red Cross flag, they don't want someone, you know, like I said, like you're trying to say, jumping on the wrong side. But the flag on that particular location was on the correct side and where Vince was down. So I get what you're saying. Go to a spot where people could see it better. But protocol wise, they always go to the spot which would best block the rider, which is that side of the jump.
Yes, I don't disagree with what you said, but what you have said doesn't make me disagree with what I said either.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, like you said, there should have been a better line of sight for the riders because they all funneled from inside to outside. So they're going from far right to far left of the track. They're not looking right going up the face of the jump. They're trying to jump in the ruts, which is what all the guys who jumped said they were doing. Like, I'm looking at ruts. I'm not looking at the flag.
Do you remember when the finish structure used to have a massive LED screen?
Yes.
What if you managed to illuminate that?
Like, so giant, like, red cross?
Yeah, like it was just a red block or a yellow block. Would you see that?
Yeah, but
if it was flashing?
Yeah, but that's my question is, like, so on the finish line jump specifically, let's disregard every other section of the track and just talk about a red cross on the finish line jump.
Yeah, because this is a very, very, very unique situation.
Yes. Could you not have a like little red LED light on the inner lining of the finish line jump that blinks?
I think that would be hard to see.
Really? Like along the entire inside of the finish line. So like it's facing inward towards the track as you're going towards it, you're going to see something blinking. No?
I'm imagining like Christmas lights. And I'm thinking you wouldn't really see Christmas lights.
If you came out of the corner and 58 times that day in qualifying and heat races and stuff, you saw nothing and suddenly lights are blinking, you wouldn't tell me people would look?
No, because I think it would be a weird angle. Like, it would be too small, and I think it would be too... And, like, because it's on the side, it's a weird angle.
Okay, well, just say put it on the front of the finish jump. So it's like an LED strip all the way across the front of it.
I don't know. In my head, I have Christmas lights, which I imagine would be hard to see. So I cannot get away from the Christmas light image I have.
Yeah. A lot of people brought up, why don't we put an LED light that goes to the transponder in a sector based on the handlebars? And I like that idea a lot. However, I've talked to a lot of riders about these green lights on the forks, which I know is not the handlebars, and it's much further down the bike. But not one single rider has said, yes, I see those when they go on. And not that they're like leaning over the front of the bike going like, what's going on down there? But I would almost wonder that we'd have the same problem with something on the handlebars in that they're looking forward, not down. No?
Yeah, and also I feel that would be a safety hazard because you're riding, and then randomly your handlebar starts blinking at you. Maybe you'd be like, what the fuck?
Especially if it was not a situation and then you're rolling and there's just a malfunction or something like that, which is I think what they're trying to avoid. So in a way, all of this gets back to in-helmet communication talk again, which we had earlier this year when we talked about lapped traffic and that situation of whether or not in-helmet communication could solve lapped traffic issues. Now we're here whether they could solve red cross flag issues. Do you think that if we had one-way communication from either the team/mechanic and or an official to a rider, which I think is not a good idea, that it would help it?
Yes, but it opens a can of worms, doesn't it? And would you really be able to hear it? Probably not. And what if... Okay, we have that. Wait, you said not with the official, but with your team. Correct? That was... Right. Hi, Jet. It's Lewis here, your team manager. The Red Cross flag is out, but you know what? Just jump it. And you know what? We'll just say that the radio didn't work. Okay, over.
Is that not going to happen? Yeah, but it's still an infraction, so you're just screwing him at that point.
But would it not be a defense to go, my radio communication didn't work?
It doesn't matter. Use your eyeballs at that point. The failsafe.
But in that case, we've got that's the current situation.
But the failsafe is to have radio communications so that if you are a team member, if you are Lars Lindstrom in the tower and standing right there watching the Red Cross flag being displayed, you can quickly radio your team and say, make sure he doesn't jump or something along those lines. Like, especially another thing, too, is I know it wasn't. Like, Jet didn't have that thing dominantly won necessarily, but he was out 3 or 4 seconds on Eli. And the Red Cross flag came out a whole lap before he got to the finish line. Do you think that Lars radioed to Christian and said, put it on the board, Red Cross on finish?
No.
So then again, they're not even communicating that.
Scared to say this, but it has run through my mind. Guys were going to the inside and rolling the finish all day, like at the end of races and whatever. Did Eli really see the Red Cross flag, or did he just coincidentally roll the finish at the end of the race because there was no one behind him and there was no need to push?
I mean, it certainly is possible that when you watch him roll the finish line, he kind of goes over and then starts looking around like, did I see what I think I saw or whatever? And all the guys that said that they did jump it were like, I was going up the face, and then I was like, oh shit, that's there. So yeah, there's a world that Eli maybe actually didn't see it and just by chance rolled. Because
that was a theme throughout the day, wasn't it? Like practice, heat races, like guys were rolling the finish at the end of the race because the fast line was go to the inside and the race is done. You've got no one on your ass.
Yeah.
Roll it.
Right. Well, and so again, to explain, Vince Freeze was down. His bike had, I think, blown up or something in transition there. That happened as Jet and Eli were crossing the finish line onto the white flag, which the Red Cross flag was not out for. It came out right in front of Chase and Jason on the white flag lap. And they both jumped, and then Kupin and Plessinger jumped, and then Jet was the only guy to jump on the finish. Everyone rolled the finish.
Which, okay,
well, Jason did jump it, actually, sorry. Jason jumped to finish as well.
So would that, I would argue that validates my point somewhat, or no?
That Tomac wouldn't have seen it?
Which was just rolling the finish without, for no reason, almost.
Right. Yeah, could
not
be.
Not that it changes anything, not that I'm trying to create a narrative or push a narrative or anything like that. Merely an observation.
To wrap this up real quick, of all the topics or all the things that are laid in front of us of what could be done, what would be your preferred method of trying to alleviate this from being a problem?
Well, I don't like the Christmas lights. So St. Louis specific, I would do what I said and put a flagger on the other side of the takeoff with the Red Cross flag.
Okay.
To make sure it's a very different situation to the... I mean, having one man even makes it even more difficult. Maybe if there were two men there, it would be more separate. But if it's one man, there's only so much configuration you can have. Yeah. Again, very impressed. Great effort by that man.
Yeah, I would do in-helmet communication, but it's not literally just for the Red Cross thing. I think one of the best things that NASCAR has is that if you're a fan, you can show up and grab a headset, a NASCAR-approved headset, and listen into team chatter. And I think that would be amazing for this sport.
Okay. Out of all the riders in the main events, do you have complete belief that every single team would use the in-helmet communications professionally and not just chat shit to the rider at some point?
Yeah, they probably would, but that's part of it, I guess. I don't know. Like in NASCAR as well, they do the same thing. It's supposed to be for, hey, caution's out, come pit now or whatever. But sometimes in NASCAR, it'll be like, man, you're really shitty in that turn right there or something like that. Like with their
okay.
Team.
I felt like that wasn't meant, well, that was like not what it was designed for, but okay.
Yeah. Anyway, we went definitely a little long on that topic and we're going really long on this show at this point, but let's rush through these last couple topics. And the first one here is our last moto topic. And it's debating rookies in the 250 class a little bit because it's weird to consider them rookies because they did so many Supercross Futures races that they don't really feel like it. But Julien Beaumaire and Ryder DeFrancesco are both still rookies in 250SX and they're both on factory teams. They're both under the Austrian umbrella. And more or less, they both kind of end up finishing in the same area as each other every single week, 7th, 8th, 6th, somewhere in there. So, Lewis, which of these guys is actually having the better rookie season?
Well, my first point is that I can't believe that Ryder D's best result is an eighth, because he has definitely been better than that, agreed?
I think so.
Even to a similar extent, I can't believe that Juju's best result is a sixth, because I would argue that he's been a little better than that at points as well. So I feel as though if you look at the results, maybe you are harsher on them both than you need to be, because I do believe there have been signs of potential there. Ryder D at the Anaheim 2 Triple Crown, I felt like he was really fast there. There was a lot of potential. Maybe Juju's been better, though. I would say that Juju has been more noticeable on a consistent basis. But is that also to do with starts, maybe?
No, I think it's 100% to do with starts. Okay. Because Juju starts second, third, every single week. His starts are tremendous. And then goes backwards to seventh. Which you could say is a detriment, because Ryder D will sometimes start top five. He doesn't always get bad starts.
Well, no, honestly, I was just thinking this. Outside of one of the main events at that A2 Triple Crown, has Ryder D actually started near the front at all?
Yeah, he started like third or fourth in race two, I think, this week. Or three. Whichever the one he didn't crash in late.
Okay, but, okay, is it not... Is a Ryder D's starts not a problem?
A little bit. I mean, but... Well, it's tough because you're right. Like, he's on a factory machine, so he should be outstarting.
Well, no, I don't mean this is we're heading into this rabbit hole where me talking about starts is getting misconstrued again. I'm not saying like fuck him and his starts. I'm saying are his starts holding him back somewhat?
Yeah, no, you're right. But I was just trying to say that like he should be, in my opinion. This is not a knock on Bar X, but they would consider it. I think that Ryder D should always be starting in front of Bar X guys, but I think more often than not, Bourdon is ahead of him. No?
Well, yeah, Bourdon does seem to be an exceptional starter. But to be honest with you, when I look at starts, I don't really go into the bike stuff, because I feel like one little delayed shift, crooked rut, you know, there's so much... There's so much at play where it's not just, oh, you're on a better bike, get a better start. So yeah. I don't really go into that. Confidence has a lot to do with it. Like, you've seen guys, look at Eli. He's on a Star Yamaha 450, and his starts before St. Louis were subpar.
Yeah. Let me ask you this then. With Ryder D specifically, not Juju, Ryder D had Juju starts. Is his season different? Like, is he getting top fives? Or is that literally, they are literally seventh and eighth place guys right now? Obviously, they have the potential to get better. But that's where their speed is at. If they start back, they get eighth or seventh. If they start up front, they get eighth or seventh.
I feel like, yeah, Ryder D would have... If Ryder D had Juju's starts, he would have Juju's results.
Okay, so they're one and of the same, kind of.
Is it, if you are either Max Lee or Ian Harrison, are you somewhat concerned that Garrett Marchbanks is that much better than them? Because
no.
You can't expect them to beat RJ, Levi, Jordan. So I'm using Marchbanks as like a, is that the first guy where they're like, we should really be beating him?
No, I would not say that at all. Because if I'm them, I look at Garrett Marchbanks as former race winner, Garrett Marchbanks. Guy that almost won a race this year, Garrett Marchbanks. 4 years of experience, Garrett Marchbanks. Like, he's a veteran. I know it's weird to compare that with where RJ and Jordan Smith's careers are at this point in the 250 class, but Garrett Marchbanks is kind of a 250 class veteran. So to compare Juju and Ryder D, who are on start number seven of their Supercross careers, to Garrett Marchbanks, who's probably in the 30s in main events already, I think that that's probably what they look at. The experience is what gets them there.
I would agree with all of that, but I'm coming from a place where I feel as though Marchbanks does not get the respect that he deserves for what he has done. I feel like that all of that is correct, but I don't necessarily believe that it translates.
Sure, but are you saying that now we're on the Marchbanks topic, but are you saying that because Garrett isn't being looked at as a factory guy, like he should
maybe
be... But I think the problem with Garrett is that he looks at himself at a certain threshold of what he should be making on a team, and the factories don't want that. Like, they're not going to pay that money for Garrett Marchbanks. They would maybe pay it for Deegan, just putting a name out there.
Well, Kellen, we all know you.
Yeah.
Deegan Army, just give it a rest, yeah? Yeah. Like, just calm it down. We're on a podcast. Calm it down. I know you're a big Deegan guy, so I don't want you to get all excited and start talking about YouTube numbers. Okay. Here we go. This is coming up, isn't it? You're going to start ranting about how Deegan's YouTube numbers are so much higher than Marchbanks.
No, I'm not going to talk about that.
Oh, okay.
No. But to get back to the topic of Juju and Ryder D, again, I think it's experience. Like, I like, even interviewing Ryder D at Seattle, I was kind of like, man, this is only race six for you of your professional career, like in terms of Supercross. I know he did Nationals, but does it feel like that? And he was even kind of like, yes and no, because in one sense, I feel like I've done a ton of Supercross races because of Futures, but also no, because when I raced Futures, I did not have this competition, so I wasn't getting like beaten this level every week. I could win Futures or get second or third, and it would be a good result. Eighth here sometimes can feel like a win.
Yeah, Ryder D said that to me at Anaheim 1, that when we were having a similar conversation about it not feeling like a rookie season, blah, 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 he said that Will was getting annoyed at him in practice because and was like, why isn't he doing this? And then he was like, and then Will was even like, oh, hang on, it's his first Supercross.
Yeah.
Like, it is weird. Like, I even, yeah, that conversation, I started the interview by with being like, your first Supercross. And then I like was like, wait, I second guessed myself. I was like, is it really? Yeah. And I was like, it really is your first Supercross. Like, that's so hard to understand.
Yeah. Okay, so to wrap this topic up, which of them is actually having the better season in your opinion?
Juju by a hair. I could really go either way.
I would say Juju as well, because the one thing that Ryder D is not learning is what the speed is up front, because it's not starting up there consistently. At least Juju every single week is like, oh, that's what they're doing. And
yeah, and what Juju has beaten Ryder D in every main event except for one.
Right. But again, like you said, it seems like if Ryder D had the starts, they'd be the same, right? They would probably have similar speed.
Ryder D is very Ryder D is more underrated than Juju.
Yeah, for sure. All right, yeah, I'm on board. I think Juju's having the better season, and I'm actually excited to see both of them outdoors, because I think that they'll Juju's definitely going to get some starts. So FFLs all day. All right, let's get into our final topic. It's a non-moto topic. It's a topic that I am bringing to the table today, Lewis, because I saw it happen. And so on our flight home, you and I both took the same flights. We laid over in Salt Lake City. And on our second flight home from Salt Lake City to San Diego this past week, and there's a guy sitting in front of me to the left-ish, so I got a clear view of him the whole time. And this guy was dressed in, like, you know, a jacket, like almost looked like a Letterman's jacket. I don't know if you know what that is. And then he had like a backwards baseball cap on, and like all the expectations of what you'd expect this guy to sound like is what he was, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm getting an image in my head, Kellen, a very clear image. Yeah. I won't go into the specifics here, but I'm getting an image in my head.
He had headphones in, and almost the entire flight, it's like an hour and 40 minute flight, he's just like dancing and like, oh yeah, and like a couple times I think he yelled or something like that, just getting into the music of whatever he was listening to. And there was two people sitting right next to him, and then this guy gets off the plane, and then we're going to baggage claim, and this guy is just like still jamming or vibing or whatever he's doing, and good on him, man, he's having a great time. And he's just like pacing back and forth in front of the baggage claim, which, you know, that thing, like everyone just kind of stands in like a circle around it, but he's making it so no one can stand in this like 40-foot radius of where he's pacing back and forth. And he's like looking around, and we're all standing there for like 15 minutes as he's pacing, and I was just like, it's honestly kind of annoying me. I'm sorry, not sorry, but this guy has like my life is more important than others kind of energy about him, where like I'm not bothering anybody because nothing matters. Like, I don't care that I'm dancing and like rubbing elbows with people next to me on the plane for an hour and a half. I don't care that I'm walking in front of people, sprinting back and forth for some reason in front of baggage claim for 15 minutes, like just living his life, not caring about anybody else around him.
Is it not quite clear that he has some sort of issue?
I don't think so, because he was, like, in my opinion, a well put together guy. Like, it wasn't like he was like disheveled of any kind. And
did he look like he had a carer at all?
A what?
A carer.
No, he was by himself. Okay. And okay. Actually, when I was leaving, a little girl, I don't, it could be his daughter, came running up and gave him a big hug, and like he picked her up and all this stuff too. So
is it possible that she was the carer and they had got separated in the airport and the hug was a, oh my God, I found you.
Okay. Can I ask you, would you be annoyed with this guy sitting next to you, like dancing the whole time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Also, I wouldn't have the balls to do anything about it.
I wouldn't either. Just sit there and have his arm rubbing.
Too awkward for that. I would probably, I'm too awkward for that. So I would probably just sit there and go as many times as possible, hoping that he's going to get the hint.
He can't even hear you, dude. His music was blasting. I'm sure.
No, I'd like get nose to nose with him and just go.
But I mean, like, it was enough where like he's shaking the seat and like stomping on the ground and like doing all this stuff with his little weird dance routine while sitting on an airplane seat, and we're all sardined in there. I was annoyed by that. And then just watching him pace around, I was like, dude, this guy has massive main character syndrome. Like, I am the only person that exists in this realm right now, and everyone else is just a robot.
Well, I would argue, I find it funny that I have definitely seen someone do exactly this on a plane before. So there are multiple of these people out there, which is even more surprising.
There's two main characters then, three.
Four. I feel like I have seen this multiple times.
Yeah.
Maybe he was listening to LVK.
Yeah, hopefully. Maybe he was just...
And he was vibing. He was loving it. He was just like, vibing. This is good shit. This is good shit.
But the whole point of this topic in essence is like, why does it feel like less and less people have courtesy for others anymore?
Well, you could switch this around to our regular segment. I am the man. Am I a dick for enjoying my music on the plane?
Yeah, could be. Dude, enjoy your music. And like, I'm glad that he was dancing, but like shaking the whole seat, stomping on the ground, yelling a couple times. A little much, no?
Wait. Stomping on the ground.
Yeah, like his feet were like dump, 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 like whatever.
Well, imagine if you were napping next to him, you'd wake up and think the plane was going down.
Exactly.
But oh my God, this guy's freaking out. We're all doomed.
Yeah. Right? So like that's what I'm saying is like why is there not courtesy? Why is there not like, wait a minute, there are other people around me, so I'm going to enjoy myself, but I'm not also going to disturb others by enjoying myself.
To bring it full circle, Callum, the world is fucked.
That's how we bring it all the way back around.
We're right back at the start. The world is fucked. Yeah. All sorts of nutters out there. He may have been a serial killer. Serial killer tendencies there. Certainly off the beaten road. Maybe dancing to his music was the least of his troubles that day because he went home and murdered an entire family.
Yeah. But so another like spinoff of this of people not having courtesy, when my wife and I went to Europe for Motocross of Nations and we have our daughter with us. No, actually, you know what? I'm going to go even further back. When we went to Italy 3 years ago now to watch the end of MXGP and we're in Mantova and the Mantova streets are tiny, as you know, mm-hmm. Sidewalks are tiny. And at that point, our daughter was still in a stroller more often than not. And the amount of people that we would be walking towards, the two of us, and then we would funnel into like a single file line with like my wife pushing my daughter and I would be behind her. And we'd come towards people who would just refuse to like acknowledge our existence and just kind of walk through us to the point where sometimes we'd have to like go in the street or whatever, was unbelievable. And I was like, who are these people? Why do they keep doing this?
I'm trying to think if this is a European thing or not.
I think it happens in the US too.
But I guess it's kind of European because the roads are so much smaller.
Yeah. But I mean, not even the courtesy to be like, oh, there's a child in a stroller. I'm going to make sure they don't go in the street. I'll give them a little bit of room so they can stay on the sidewalk. Doesn't even happen.
Tell you what gets on my tits. When you're in a line and a person either behind you or in front of you is literally just stood on your toes.
Yeah, right.
I had someone in Orlando Airport when we went to Daytona. I was in the line for the rental car queue. They were literally stood with their foot under my bag, like my little stroller. Like, that's how close they were. And I was like, what the fuck are they doing? So I literally was like stomping the bag on their foot, as in like, yeah, like, are you having a fucking laugh? Like, him. And they just weren't getting it. They were just like stood. Like, you can imagine how close they were to me. I got sick after that race. Wonder why. Mm. And then to top it off, Kellen, they started dancing to their music. And I thought, who does this guy think he was? So maybe it was the same person.
Maybe it was the same guy. Although this guy had a San Diego Padres hat on backwards, so I don't know that he would be.
Dude, San Diegans not travel outside of state? Fault. Is that what they're called? San Diegans?
Yeah, San Diegans.
Really? That was a complete spitball.
No, what else would it be? San Diegans?
Sandies.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Just common Sandies. Courtesy. Common courtesy. Is it that tough? Like, just look around sometimes. Give your neighbor a little space. You know?
I don't know. I was on a plane the other week, and I was stood in the aisle waiting to get off, and a guy opened the overhead bin, and the door hit my head, and he told me it was my fault.
Oh, your fault because you stood up too fast or what?
I can't remember why, but we were stood for a while and then he finally decided to open it and it just donged my head. And he just, before I even could say a word, he just turned around and went, that was your fault. And I was like, oh, okay.
That was your fault. All right.
I also had that in a parking lot once where someone reversed into me. I could see them doing it. They were on their way and I was like, like, you're going to hit me. They reversed into me. Got out their car and immediately said to me, I didn't hit you. And I was like, well, one, you've got out your car, so why have you done that?
Yeah.
If you didn't hit me.
Yeah.
And two, if you didn't hit me, why would you feel the need to tell me that you didn't hit me? You fucking idiot. The world is fucked.
Yeah, the world is fucked. That's our topic this week, huh?
That's our title. The world is fucked. And you know what? Maybe next week it'll be less fucked, but yeah. I wouldn't hold out much hope.
All right. We've gone over the hour and hit all of our topics today. So, Lewis, good show. I think we hit a lot of fun topics today. And yeah, it's good to catch up with you as well, remotely.
I wish you well in your endeavors to reach maximum health once again.
Thank you, sir.
Do well in life. Like, I know you shine as bright as I know you can. And don't be a pushover.
I will not be a pushover. Thanks, Lewis.
I believe it.
I appreciate you.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye, sir. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, to another LVK More Than Moto, brought to you by EVS Sports. And not sure we'll be back next week because it's an off week, but even so, we will be back sooner rather than later with More Than Moto here, brought to you by EVS Sports.